devices. We'll start with the mission statement. The Veterinary Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, as well as the welfare of animals, by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. And we do have Assistant Agent Mark Harris present, and Dr. James, could you please do the roll call?
Sure. Dr. Byrne? Okay. Ms. Ross?
Here.
Dr. James is here. Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
And Dr. Rice?
Here.
Thank you. So we'll start with our initial investigative reviews. We do have a full agenda today, so we're going to try to make sure that we're moving through. We're going to start with Section 2, Number 5, as the first case, 24137. Then we'll go down to Number 12, Case 2503. Number 3 will be Number 3, Case 24134. Number 4 will be Number 7, Case 24139. Number 5 will be Number 9, Case 24145. Number 6 will be 10, Case 124146. 7 will be 1, Case 24130. And then we'll move on down the remainder of the IARs. So we'll go ahead and start with Section 2, Number 5, Case 24137. Tracy, could you please read the gauntlet?
Yes. Case 24137, the complainant is Michelle Coates. The respondent is Tracy Feldman, DVM. On February 29th, 2024, Bailey, a two-year-old female Great Dane, and Thanos, a four-year-old female Great Dane, were presented to respondent for a spay and neuter procedures. The procedures were performed, and the dogs were discharged later that day. Bailey began to decline shortly after discharge. 4 days after the procedure, the dog passed away. Thanos had a scrotal ablation and had been sent home on antibiotics. On March 12, 2024, Thanos was presented to urgent pet care for evaluation. It was suspected the dog had septic pneumonia and was transferred to an emergency facility for advanced care. On March 14, 2024, due to the dog's declining condition, the dog was humanely euthanized. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved by Mr. Bennett and seconded by Dr. Rubin that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you. And I believe we do have the complaint, Michelle Coates,
present.
I'm going to come forward.
Hello.
Sorry for your losses. Could you state your name for the record?
Michelle Coates.
Okay, and you are the complainant?
I am.
Okay. You have up to 5 minutes to present any new materials or information to the board. You do have what you have submitted.
Right. So my only, at this point, I know the vet herself probably didn't do any misdoing, but I do feel the clinic themselves did mishandle my dogs. That's why they both passed away. Like I said previously, like the one passed within 4 days of coming home. The other one passed over 2 weeks later, but they both presented with the exact same symptoms. Like I said, one was 2 days after the procedure. The other one happened to be after he got off the antibiotics by 2 days. I just feel that the clinic themselves, even though they have the best laid protocols in place, I don't know if they were properly followed that day. For the fact that I had two dogs from the same clinic both pass, I feel that something happened there for them to have gotten sick and passed. At this point, I'm just kind of looking for some financial compensation from that clinic to at least acknowledge that they something did happen while they were there under their care. Even though, yes, they both walked out of that clinic under their own dog power, the fact that I don't have either of them now, to me, feels like something happened while they were in their care, being transported, transferred, whatever happened, I don't know. But I just feel that they should be held somewhat financially responsible for what had happened to my dogs.
And thank you very much.
Yep.
You can go ahead and step back. Let's see. Dr. Tracy Feldman and counsel. please state your name for that?
My name's Tara Wilson. I represent Dr. Feldman. Unfortunately, she's out of town and couldn't make it today. Dr. Feldman wanted me to come and thank the board for the time spent on this. She's sympathetic to claimant's losses, but the facts don't show that there was anything that Dr. Feldman did that was below the standard of care, or that was wrong, that ultimately caused these dogs to pass. They were released, they went home. There was a significant period of time between when they between having the surgery and when they started showing symptoms, and there's just nothing to connect the anything that Dr. Feldman did to what happened with the dogs. She requests that the board follow the recommendation of the investigative committee and find the violation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this case.
Thank you. In this case of the two dogs exhibiting very similar symptoms of respiratory infection, we're assuming, one of which died fairly suddenly and the other later on, but they did have the same symptoms. And the assumption that this is a respiratory infection, everyone seems to have a consensus that that's what happened with these two dogs. And that, again, is based mainly on symptoms. However, on the male, who Thanos, did have a go to another clinic and have a workup, and that's ultimately where he decompensated and was euthanized. But he had a radiograph, and that radiograph interpretation was pneumonia, infectious versus aspiration. So that's our differential, if we're going to assume that the other patient had the same problem going on, which is likely. Aspiration really doesn't fit the case of aspiration. It can look the same on a radiograph, however, without a history. Aspiration usually occurs very quickly, and it's usually in the hospital. So if we proceed as these two dogs had some type of infection, then the question becomes, where did that infection come from? And there's several possibilities here. These two dogs could have had a subclinical infection going on, maybe viral, then went to bacterial, and then became septic. Thanos, the male, was from another household about a month prior to going in for his castration. So that's a history of, we don't know his history prior to that month for sure, what was going on with him. The other possibility that they were exposed at the clinic. This clinic has a high volume spay, neuter, dental type facility. Some of these patients, most of them don't have any history except what's supplied by the owner. As the respondent said, a large number of cases in the hospital at a time. So thinking it kind of like a kennel situation, is that possible where they would have gotten the infection? Again, possible. Then we have the final thing, which would be what we call fomite infection, meaning something like a trach tube or anesthetic machine contaminated. That's a possibility also. There doesn't appear to be any evidence of that. a necropsy in this case, it might have helped if it would have ruled out other things. And then if they had the same type of pneumonia and a culture, it was the same thing. But it still doesn't tell us where they got it. So it could be a little bit helpful. That was offered and declined. I'm not sure it would really answer all our questions. So in light of the fact that we just don't know where this infection came from, and there are multiple possibilities and no direct evidence that it was any of the actions of the respondent in case 24137, I would make a motion to agree with the investigative committee and dismiss no violation.
I'll second that. And I think what's really important to highlight is this: when things happen, a lot of times when we look back to the subclinical infection, most people don't think about that. Like we as individuals or the pets could have some low-level disease that they're fighting off, right? We might have been exposed to a cold, but we don't actually come out with the cold because our body fights it off. But when we have anesthesia suppresses the immune system. So we could have something that would have probably have gone through the system and not been a problem, but then we've suppressed it because we did a surgery. And so oftentimes owners will feel that they got something from the time of surgery, but they actually had gone in and had it. They just couldn't fight it anymore because of that suppression. So I'm glad you brought that to light.
Well, I would like to have a discussion on this, though. Does anybody else have a concern when we spoke with the owner on the 4th that Thanos was brought up and that there was a little happy little cough?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like it was kind of dismissed as...
Trike 2?
Yeah. I mean, that's a little concerning to me, as could we have caught something earlier at that point, as opposed to, well, let's just continue to watch, and then now everything grows for another few days, and finally we come in on, what day was that, 12th or something?
And
so if I had a patient that passed away, and I didn't know, even if I didn't know at all what was going on,
right.
I had another patient that was in the same household in the same day, and I was told we're coughing, I wouldn't just easily dismiss that as, oh, it's probably just tracheal tube. So that does concern me.
I
have to at least discuss that part.
I agree. The question is, was he on antibiotic at that time? And I think he was when that phone call was made. So that's number one. And I'm not sure exactly how much information the respondent had about what happened.
I don't want to read into the phone call, but we have what it says in there saying that to continue to watch and make sure we're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something I would say personally. I have a problem with that, because if I have one patient that died of respiratory condition and a sibling is also coughing, I don't care if it's just a little bit of a tracheal condition. I'm going to be looking at that patient. I'm going to be listening to him and see what's going on. And the fact that we just kind of say, no, let's just watch it, and now that patient's dead, that's a concern. That's not a dismissal, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, so we have a motion and a second, so we want to vote and then see how that goes.
Sounds good.
Okay. So I'll vote so. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
That's a 3-2. 4-2.
4-2. Motion passes.
I mean, can we still? I mean, we already dismissed it, but can we do a letter of concern?
No.
I mean, because we didn't make this. Because you always dismiss.
Yeah,
I mean,
you just was clear. That would be the minor motion. That was my concern too.
But you just passed a motion to dismiss.
Yeah,
the
case.
But that's what we always do with letter of concern.
Well, like, dismiss with this is the same motion.
You have to do it together.
Yeah.
Yes.
Together, all dismissals.
Unless somebody rescinds the motion.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, I.
The vote was 4-2.
I think it's fine. I would say this doctor specifically, I don't see any issues. I agree with that, right? I would have taken more action. I'm a little concerned about whether there was other stuff going on. Section 2, number 12, case 2503, regarding Tara Murphy, DVM. Tracy, could you please raise the front line?
Yes.
6/25/03, the complainant is Claire Agnew, the respondent is Tara Murphy, DVM. On May 8th, 2024, Snuffy, a 16-year-old male cocker spaniel, was presented to respondent's premises for evaluation due to inappetence. After evaluation, the pet owner consulted with her family, and they elected to humanely euthanize the dog. The dog was administered an injection of method of IM, which did not provide enough sedation to place an IV catheter. Therefore, midazolam and ketamine was also administered IM. The dog still was not sedate enough for IV catheterization. Complainant elected to abort the euthanasia procedure, and her family took the dog home while she spoke with respondent. Complainant expressed her concerns for direct aversion occurring in the premises due to the dog not being able to be sedated. Respondent did not agree with complainant's assessment due to hospital policies, procedures, and security measures in place with respect to controlled substances. Respondent explained that some dogs do not respond to medications when stressed and anxious. This was a straight-to-board case. It did not go in front of the investigative committee. It was brought straight to you for your review and deliberation.
Do you have the complaint, Claire?
Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Could you please state your name?
My name is Tara Agnew.
Thank you. You have up to 5 minutes to address the board if any new information that you'd like to provide.
I appreciate it. So, want to speak in terms of on that day. We had brought in, my daughter had brought in Snuffy. She ended up there for over 6 hours. These injections were done in the latter part of that. We were told that he was brought in because he hadn't eaten for days, so he was not himself, and that's why she brought him to the emergency vet clinic. We came to the decision in terms of euthanasia. We were told that he was in pain, or she was told that he was in pain. It was a very hard decision. That's when I showed up. I was there for the injections. I was told that it would make him very sleepy. The first one did nothing. Later they gave him the second one. It did nothing. When they came back in to administer this, I just want to make it clear, they had one tech trying to administer shaving his paw. They had my daughter helping to hold him down. They had another vet that had applied a muzzle because he was fighting. He's 16 years old. He hasn't eaten in 3 days. Reportedly, he had 2 shots of opioids, is what we were told. Fighting like heck, there was actual fur flying in the room, and I put a stop to it. It didn't seem right. It's not his time to go. I talked to the vet about Dr. Murphy, who was not involved in his care, but she was the vet in charge, about my concerns that the drugs were diverted. She said that they have cameras on the space where they have narcotics, so they couldn't be. I explained that, unfortunately, addicts are creative and they are smart. And there is a walk between where the cabinets are to where the room that we were in. It could easily be transverted. She said that he probably had adrenaline. He'd been there for, like I said, 6 hours. I'm sure that he got adrenaline when they tried to shame him, but not during the periods of when he had the drugs. He'd been there for a very long time. We brought him home that night. He was not tired. There was absolutely no change in his behavior from his usual behavior. I was contacted by the clinic a few weeks later to come pick up his remains. He had not been let down, but then I called the office. I wasn't sure what I was going to get if I showed up there to pick him up. And the office manager told me that because the euthanasia drugs had been taken out of the cabinet and not voided, that this was an automatic notification to me to pick up these remains, and that reinstated my concerns that they had taken the drugs out of the cabinet, it had not been voided, and this had not been taken seriously. The office manager, she dismissed me and pretty much said, I'm sorry you feel that way, and that's when I felt that I needed to do something. I do not want anything to happen to Dr. Murphy's license. What I am looking for is education, training on the signs of drug diversion, narcotic diversion inside the clinic, review of precautions, and training for investigations into that. That's all I'm looking for. I'd like to heal this. Snuffy is still at home with us. His veterinarian ended up eventually getting him steroids, which fixed his appetite issue. He still has days. He's 16 years old. He still has days where he doesn't want to feel like eating, but otherwise he's doing fine. So we still have Snuffy, and I just want to feel more confident that that if there is a diversion issue, that it would be caught, it would be investigated, it would not be dismissed, and that nobody would have to go through this, either in terms of seeing what happened to Snuffy, or the day that my daughter had, she's very tight with him, or what our family went through, nor the notification to pick up the names that I don't know what they're going to give them, honestly.
So, in this case, as we just heard, this is an accusation of diversion by someone in this clinic. And this board takes cases of diversion very seriously when it involves our licensees. In terms of their license, other than that, we would refer to DEA. But when we look at this case, the basis for the accusation is that the patient was not affected by the drugs given. And I don't really have an explanation for that in my experience, especially with these types of drugs, particularly the opioids. You can get a tremendous variation in response. Doing pre-medications for surgery, sometimes you think your doses are on the high end and you don't get the response you want, and you make adjustments, and it happens. It happens all the time. In this case, I just don't see any evidence to support the accusation of diversion. The hospital's controlled substance protocols are actually above the minimum standard. They use the QBEX system and the fingerprints and the witness. The drugs in question and the amounts would be very minimal in their effects on a human. Very minimal, very small amounts of drugs. So unless we had some type of collection scheme going on, it would be, these are very, very small amounts of drugs. And you would question if someone was trying to misuse controlled substances, why in this scenario would they give something to a dog they knew wasn't going to affect it? So it doesn't really make any sense if that was an attempt at a diversion. So I have sympathy for the complainant who ended up having a very, very bad experience in this clinic. And I think everyone is sorry for that, but I just don't see any evidence to support diversion. So my motion would be in 2503 to dismiss with no violation.
Yeah, second that and say this is, I don't like this case. I don't like necessarily how it proceeded. I don't see a fault anywhere. I don't see a statute violation. It's just one of those cases that I just don't like. It's just a sad thing all around, but I don't see anybody doing anything wrong. Coming to the diversion thing, it's a very difficult thing because when you're looking, yes, at these small amounts, we can look at volumes and that kind of stuff, but when you're looking at actual drug concentration, that's a very difficult thing to determine on any kind of basic investigation, and that's just not something that we're able to undertake, and that's something that I think really anybody's truly able to undertake, unless we see large-scale kind of diversion of those things. So this is, I understand the concerns. I definitely can understand the arguments from the veterinarian that stress definitely can change response to sedatives. I've seen that myself. I've given pretty hefty doses, and I'm like, oh, you'll just sleep pretty quick, and they're not. And it's like, that's weird. So like I said, so in the fact that, like I said, I just don't like how this proceeded, I don't see a specific problem. It's just an unfortunate situation, and I'm sorry for kind of everyone involved. But yeah, I agree. I don't see any statute violations. It's just kind of a sad case, and I'm sorry for all that. But that is going to do it now.
I think the concern I have is that this case is that the email of contact regarding the dog's cummings.
The auto, yeah, the auto,
yeah,
and stuff.
I just
That would be horrifying to me if I got that email. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like it's not a violation necessarily. I can see in this case that it's clearly a system issue and it's a mistake, but to not talk about it and for them not to realize that this is the thing that the clinic needs to fix, this should never happen, is to me ignoring the fact that they have these opportunities. I personally feel like there should be a letter of concern for the fact that you're not ensuring your system is functioning the way you want it to, or you're not taking the time to go and back out those drugs. If you know that that's how it operates, then fix it.
Okay. No, and I don't disagree with that personally. My question, and thank you for bringing that up, because that is kind of something I thought too, is that against the veterinarian or is that against the facility?
Well,
yeah, but I mean, the letter's attorney is still registered under the veterinarian for
sure.
Attorney. So, like I said, so is that actually the veterinarian's fault, or is that the established policies of the practice?
That's what I thought when I read through that, and I agreed with you totally, mm-hmm. but that's isn't the respondent.
So do we open a case
against the
responsible?
Or do we
hope that the veterinarian is the only course I could see in that case?
I thought this was the vet, not the premise.
I thought it was the responsible vet. Yeah.
But it's not against the premise license, it's against the vet. Would that be different?
Is the premise license
It's a letter of concern. It doesn't really.
So we have a motion and a second, unless we're rescinding it.
Oh, we're discussing it still, though. But I mean, is that the same?
But we have a motion and a second.
As before, I can amend that.
Yeah,
that motion.
I think we need to hear who was the responsible veterinarian from Victoria.
I think Tracy.
Yes, I believe this is the responsible veterinarian for the practice. I will double check, but this is why Ms. Agnew filed a complaint against Dr. Murphy, because she is the responsible veterinarian.
It's not the veterinarian saw. This is not the veterinarian that saw.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh.
And I would say, if you're talking about Dr. Virgin, you would be doing it against her.
She wasn't the doctor involved in the case.
That's why I'm saying this is who I listen to the letter of concern.
Because that does go to the unit. We don't have not the premise license.
Yeah.
Okay, so that goes under the individual. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's the premise holder. Okay. Problem is with the premise. Mm-hmm. She needs to fix it. We're issuing you a letter of concern just like we would in any other case.
I'm going to rescind my second plan. I'm sorry, I apologize. I didn't have the premise license holder again. So I'm going to rescind that second there.
Does anybody else have any thoughts on this letter of concern?
I can amend the motion if you want.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I'll amend my motion to dismiss no violation and issue a letter of concern. I think you stated it pretty well regarding the
unabated.
Yeah.
Remains.
Contacting the owner. Remains that clearly not. Like that needs to be fixed in the system.
Okay. I'll resecond that.
Okay. A motion and second. Voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. We're going to take session 2, number 3, case 24-134, regarding Kelly Pettinger, DVM. Tracy, could you please read the file?
Yes. The complainant is, so in case 24-134, the complainant is Yvonne Maggio. The respondent is Kelly Penninger, DVM. On April 20, 2024, Dot, a 14-year-old male domestic short-haired cat, was presented to respondent for a dental procedure. The cat was fractious and was hypersalivating in his kennel. Due to the cat's temperament, sedation was required prior to IV catheterization. The cat was anesthetized, and glycopyrrolate was administered to the cat to help reduce the hypersalivating. The dental was performed, two teeth were extracted, and the cat recovered. During the course of the dental, staff and respondent would clear away any saliva and water buildup from the cat's mouth. After extubation, the cat was placed in his carrier to provide comfort while staff monitored. Complainant was contacted and advised the cat was ready to be picked up. Shortly after complainant was called, the cat was found unresponsive and not breathing. CPR was performed without success and the cat passed away. Complainant could not be reached to let her know what had happened. Complainant arrived to pick up the cat and respondent reported what had transpired. Respondent confirmed complainant's suspicion that the cat likely aspirated. Complainant expressed concerns that the cat was not properly monitored and normal measures taken to prevent the cat from aspirating. When the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, it was moved by Mr. Bennett and seconded by Dr. Rubin that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you. I believe we have the complainant present. Yvonne. You have up to 5 minutes to address the board with any new information that you'd like the board to have.
Okay, you have received my email with a picture of the carriers. And my main concern, I couldn't understand at the last meeting why all the questions about carrying bags, because they're for transportation only. And so when I found out that he was placed in the bag during recovery, it raised some serious concerns because in case of an emergency, it would be much more difficult to get to the animal in order to provide emergency services. And aspiration happens so quickly that the inability to get to the animal, I have a concern that it should have been placed in a crate. I mean, I thought that veterinary clinics have crates that they place the animal in during recovery. They don't place them in a carrying bag, which is for transportation only. So that's my concern, is that I think if he had been placed in a proper containment cage during recovery, it would have prevented his death. They would have been able to save him. That's my concern.
You're invited to step back.
Thank you.
And then the respondent, Kelly Petardivian. Could you please state your name for the record?
Kelly Pettinger.
Thank you. And then you have a statement or any new information for the board?
Just in addressing Yvonne's concern, that Dot was placed in a kennel within our observation area. Within that kennel, he was contained within his cat bag, mainly because of his fractious behavior. Generally, when Dot is in his cat bag, he tended to be more calm, more handleable, more tractable in general. And given his significant fractious behavior prior to the procedure and our difficulty with restraining him, we felt that it was going to be a safer recovery for him to be within that cat bag. He was observed throughout the recovery process, and it was unfortunately a very sudden incident that's between 1 to 2 minutes of him being reactive and vocal to him being non-responsive. So I think everything else was kind of addressed with the investigative committee, and as far as any other medical questions. I would like to just again express my sympathies and condolences to the NGO family for the loss of Dot. Definitely all of the staff felt that significantly. So feel very, very sad, both for the family and for the clinic itself, that he was lost as a patient.
Thank you. Okay. Dr. Mosley, you're the lead.
Okay. In this case, we have a, as we heard, a death during recovery or shortly after the procedure. And I have concerns in this case. Even though we have all the narratives and the investigative committee, I have some concerns about this recovery and a few other issues that if there is need, we need to discuss that, we can. But based on the fact that I'm unclear what happened in this case and need more information, I would make a case, motion in 24-134 to move to informal.
Second.
Okay, motion and second. Any other discussion?
Dr. Nosky, I'm sure I share some of your concerns. I'm very concerned about monitoring and how often it was done. And was it in the same 10 by 10 room, or was it actually checking on the pet?
And there are other issues also. But yes, I agree.
Motion and second to move to informal. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Section 2, number 7, case 24-139, regarding Julie Granger, GVM. Tracy, could you please read the problem?
Yes, case 24-139. The complainant is Joanne D. The respondent is Julie Granger, GVM. On April 24th, 2024, Max, a 10-year-old male corgi mix, was presented to respondent's associate on referral due to neurologic symptoms and embedded sewing needle found on small radiographs performed by a primary veterinarian. Respondent's associate submitted the dog to perform an oral exam. The foreign object could not be palpated. Therefore, the dog was discharged with the instructions to return to the surgical department the following day. On April 25th, 2024, respondent examined the dog and consulted with specialists on the best way to remove the foreign object. Diagnostic imaging was recommended to determine if the needle was superficial or was further embedded. When recovering after the ultrasound, the dog was showing neurologic abnormalities. Hypertonic saline was administered to the dog, and the dog's mental status improved. A CT scan was performed. An intracranial lesion was identified and was determined to be unrelated to the sewing needle foreign body. The dog remained hospitalized overnight for monitoring and treatment. On April 26, 2024, the dog began to decline and subsequently went into cardiac arrest. CPR was initiated. The complainant was contacted. She elected to discontinue CPR and the dog passed away. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and recommended that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you. I believe we have the complainant, Joanne. Present?
Yes. I hope you don't mind. My mom wants me to sit here with her. She is a bit older and wants me to help her articulate what she's told me. And I was also there the entire time.
Can I have you both then state your names there?
My name is Thomas Hinton.
Joanne
Hinton. Okay. And give you up to 5 minutes to address the board with any information or statement that you have.
Okay. When my son brought our dog in on the 24th, he came in because he was in pain, he hadn't eaten and he wasn't feeling good. But they suggested that they run x-rays to see what was his problem. And in that x-ray, it showed a needle in his jaw area. Okay. I didn't get there until later on that night. And our dog was in like a stupor. He couldn't walk. He wasn't coherent or nothing. He stayed that way all night long. I watched him. And so in the morning, we decided to take him in because the vet had told my son to, if they had any problems, bring him in, and that they would contact the surgery side of their office to get the needle out. So we brought him in the morning, we told him what was going on and everything, and like I said, at that time they said he was okay, but he wasn't okay because his attitude, if you look throughout his history, was always dull or inappropriate mentation or something, which meant he was like in a comatose state. He never snapped out of it, the whole thing. At one point, you know, when we finally did get him in, we had told Dr. Granger how he was acting. She wasn't concerned. All she said was she wanted to do ultrasound. I think the neurological problems were from the medication, from the propofol he was given, because he never was the same after that. But anyway, she insisted that they do a CAT scan. I told her I didn't want to do a CAT scan because she also told me that a CAT scan probably wouldn't show anything. And I said, well, then let's get right to the CT. And she said, no, we have to do that. So we went home, and we got a call later on that, of course, the ultrasound didn't show anything, and that they had to run the CAT scan. My son approved for the CAT scan. And during this time, throughout the day, they ran his first blood gases. It showed that one level is, I think it's PCO2 was low at that time. And nothing was done about that. They didn't address that problem. His other, 12 hours later, after we agreed to let him stay overnight, which, you know, she had insisted that all this time she told us he had inflammation of the brain. At no time did she ever tell us or mention a lesion or cancer or anything like she did in the history. The first time I seen that was in the history when they sent it to me. At no time at all did she tell me that. And then his when they ran his blood gases again, about 1 o'clock in the morning of the 26th, his one level, his PO2 was very high. It had gone from it went up to like 64, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't in the red at the first, but it wasn't now. Again, this was at 1 o'clock in the morning. They did nothing to treat that, you know. And from what I understand, he was getting too much oxygen. He couldn't get it out. Okay, we had calls that night because we hadn't heard from Dr. Granger like she said she would call us. At 3 o'clock, we called, and they said that he was doing fine. And we said, what's his blood pressure and things? She had to go check on the dog again because she didn't take that. And when I got the history, I noticed from 9 o'clock to when we called at 3 o'clock, they didn't check on him once. All they said was sleeping, 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 sleeping. They did not check on him once, okay? And then from reading that, and like I said, this is the first time I've ever had a five pen against a vet. We've had pets die before, and he didn't feel the need to do this. But like I said, she didn't tell us, like I said, the lesion. She didn't tell us that. And I tried to get more information on his history and his, you know, his x-rays and everything. Every time I called, the office would say, oh, we sent you that, or make up excuses. I never got the CAT. I finally got a report for the CAT scan, and but no radiographs on that one. And they told me they tossed the ultrasound. And so my thing is that knowing all this now, she broke three of your laws, you know, that you guys, you know, have for this state. She lied to us because she did tell us the truth. She kept on saying that he had inflammation of the brain. I had told her at that on the 25th that, you know, you can't get rid of this problem overnight because I've had meningitis, and I know it's not an overnight cure because that's what we were led to believe he had. Okay, she told me, no one else heard it, but she told me I know that. So I feel she ran unnecessary tests that weren't necessary because she didn't even think of, you know, checking him, because he was fine when we brought him in. After we brought him home, he was never the same at all. So they broke that rule about, you know, doing that. They never sent me all the tests or anything like that. I never did get all of them. And then like I said, she just I read all your rules in there, like in my letter. I typed, she broke three of them. And how you guys, if you guys dismiss that, you know, I don't see how you can, because she broke your rules. You know, and last time the committee said it was okay because to lie to me because she talked to specialists. Did she tell the specialist tell her to lie to us? We never heard of cancer, we never heard of lesion. And that's my biggest problem. She was very unhonest, and she broke that rule. If we would have known that he would have had a cancer, we would have taken him home. We wouldn't have bothered to do all these tests. But she never told us that. And we never got the records, and she didn't take care of our dog. And she did, according to your rule, if she broke any of those things, she should be disciplined, which I felt she should be.
And also, my mom left out some details that she wanted to talk about.
We gave her over 5 minutes. So okay. We do appreciate your statement, okay? But now it's
the fact that they disregarded to give him an anti-personal nuts. Okay.
Thank you. And then, Julie Granger, DVM, Mr. Stoll, are you...
monitoring all my deputies.
Okay, all right, thank you. So, Dr. James, you are the lead.
So this is one of our fun cases where things are really hard to interpret because you're hearing one thing and seeing something different. I definitely see where the investigative committee was coming from a standpoint of... There were clearly some communication issues here, and we heard it even in the narrative this morning of, I wasn't told about this, or I wasn't explained that, or I didn't hear this, and so you're, and I believe this owner that she really didn't truly hear that, but I think in the medical records it's supporting what was going on and why we were doing what we were doing, and so there's this disconnect, and all you can say is it's a communication disconnect, but Those are frustrating cases, and I don't, because we weren't there, and we're not going to ever really be able to know what happened on that. The medical care and what happened in this case looks completely in line. This is a really difficult case where you've got this needle that you think is a problem, and then you find out, oh wait, there's a whole other issue here. And so, you're kind of sent down this one path, and then you're having to change it, and a significant severe issue, and so I feel like the case itself was worked up and handled with the information as they were getting it. I'm not sure, I didn't look into the details specifically behind the medical records and what was sent and what wasn't sent, so that's the only thing I'm not 100% sure on, but I didn't see anything that medically that made me go this felt below our standard of care, and I was in line with supporting the findings of the investigative committee, unless you guys see something different or have heard something different this morning. I can make a motion that we support the investigative committee findings of no violations in this case, 24-130.
Second.
Anything that came up for you guys that was different than what I saw?
No, but it was a case where it changed very rapidly. And they, like you said, I think the progress in the medicine was fine, and the diagnosis. If there were communication issues along the way, they were minor, but in the record, it's there. That's really hard for us to determine. So, I would agree.
Aspirate of the swelling was obtained for culture and more clavulaxis prescribed. Respondent suggested surgical explore for culture and biopsies. On December 20th, 23, based on the culture results, clindamycin was prescribed. The dog's swelling of the limb continued. Radiographs of the dog's limb was sent to respondent's premises for recommendations. Complainant was offered recheck exams, which were declined. Complainant was dissatisfied with the care and elected to seek out a second opinion. On January 11th, 2024, the dog presented to BCA Eureka for a second opinion. The dog underwent wound debridement with beef tissue culture. The dog was continued to have discomfort, therefore amputation was discussed and elected. On February 23rd, 2024, the dog's right rear leg was amputated. During the procedures, abnormalities with the tissue was noted and histopathology revealed an aggressive invasive adenocarcinoma. Complainant expressed concerns that respondent's lack of communication, delayed response to her concerns, and failure to provide adequate medical treatment caused the pet to suffer and complainant to incur additional cost and stress. And the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you. I believe we have a complaint in Kim Durant present. Could you please state your name for the record?
Kim Durant.
Okay. And you have up to 5 minutes to provide additional information to the board.
Okay, thank you. I just wrote some dates down for me. I know you probably have all the pictures and the text messages, I hope, that went back and forth for me and Southwest. The pictures say it all. There were numerous phone calls and text messages back and forth between Southwest and myself. Dr. Hall, I understand, was an intern. I have been told that they didn't mention it was an intern. That this is a surgical resident case discount that I was receiving. I'm not questioning the surgery itself. The surgery is fine. It was the aftercare. Like I said, you can see numerous pictures. Dr. Hall never called me. I saw Dr. Hall once when she did the surgery, and second when I made an appointment on the 14th. Take her in, and at that time they did another culture. That culture I never even heard about until, I think it was like 25 days later. On the January 8th, I got a call from Gabby. At this time, I was so frustrated and upset and asked her, why isn't anybody seeing my dog? Why isn't anybody bring her in to find out what's going on? Gabby said you had an appointment, but you canceled it for work. That was not true. I made that appointment was to pick up her prescription for her, and I canceled that and picked it up at my pharmacy instead. So then on the 8th, when we were talking again, she goes, well, let's make an appointment coming up. I told her, no, I'm done. I go, it's been 2 months since I've been here. 16 days with no results from the cultures. Gabby's the one that told me about the culture, not Dr. Hall. I did have so many questions after we read this by Gabby. I don't even know what she was. I told her I wasn't bringing her back. That evening, Dr. Hall called me and left a message on my voice, on my machine, and said, yes, the wound does look bad, you can bring her in. Gabby said we have an appointment for tomorrow. No, at that time I had already told Gabby that I was not bringing her in. January 11th, I took her to Southwest, or to BCA. Urgent. They took her in right then in the surgery. They did another culture. They commented on all of the antibiotics that Riley was on. It was antibiotic, antibiotic, antibiotic. And as you can see, some of these antibiotics were very strong. And Riley was not getting, nothing was improving, nothing was happening. BCA again, like I said, jumped into action, they took care of her, did what they could. As you heard, Riley ended up losing her leg. I honestly believe that this incision, like I said, the pictures again, you can see when I, the day that I left from there, they're open. Nobody brought her in. Nobody asked to bring her in. They commented about Dr. Stewart. Why I didn't reach out to Dr. Stewart? I didn't reach out to Dr. Stewart because he didn't do the surgery. Dr. Hall did the surgery. You know, and basically I'm just getting, I think that this could have been prevented. I think honestly God could have been prevented if she would have took control from the very beginning and to find out why wasn't the swelling going down? Why wasn't the antibiotics helping her? You know, so that's where I am today. What I'm asking for, I know she's an intern. The surgery was fine. The aftercare was negligent. She literally, my dog was put on the back burner for other things that she was doing. But that's basically all I have.
Thank you. You can go ahead. Cameron Paul, DVM, your school.
Monitoring, I'm away, thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, Dr. Wright, you were the lead on this case?
Yes, thank you for that. So, this is a difficult one. It's an unfortunate case because of the end result. We lose a limb that's never something any of us want to have to deal with as a client or a veterinarian or a patient. So, it's always an unfortunate thing, and I'm sorry for that outcome there. The question is, what exactly was going on, what exactly happened, and was there any problems with how this case was managed surgically and medically? And that's where I'm having more of a difficult time, because when we see it, this implant was placed in 2019 originally, so it was very quiescent for 5 years, four or five years. Why did an infection set in? Why did something happen that much longer when this is long healed and forgotten about in the annals of history? So something happened to an implant. Yes, you can get an infection around there. And yes, you can get just random infections. It does happen. And what do you do when that happens? You go in there, you take the implant out, take all the screws, take everything out, start on antibiotics, and usually get better. So I can't fault the decisions there. A culture was done. That is, I don't want to say standard of care, but it's a good option. And starting antibiotics rather than doing it empirically based on those results is a good thing. Nothing was grown from that. There was no obvious infection there. So was there a culture or there an infection that was missed? I mean, that's always a possibility. Could we have gotten a culture for an actual growth from another area? Possibly. But you never know, and that's just kind of a game where we can't really say. But I don't see anything that was done wrong. This looks like it was done properly. Based on that, they had some antibiotics going. We're not seeing response. We come back, we do another culture, and then we get some results, and we see that the amoxiclav is not a good antibiotic for that. We change antibiotics. Again, that's what we're supposed to do. So medically, I'm seeing this kind of following what I'm supposed to see. It's just an unfortunate one. Like I said, I don't see anything statutorily done wrong in that regard. When I'm looking at this case fully, though, and I look at the radiographs, my big concern is actually the implant itself. I'm not a specialist. I'm not a surgeon. I do surgeries. I do not do bone implants since vet school, so it's been many years since then. But that plate seems a lot very long. It's extending past that tarsus. There's no screw in that last hole because there's nothing to affix it to. And that's kind of the concern. Again, this was very quiescent for many years, but did that overriding plate eventually erode the skin away, and that's what the infection set in? I don't know, but personally, I'm unhappy with the placement of that plate. So I don't see any fault with the unfortunate outcome of this surgery and all there. The only issue I could possibly see, and again, I'm not a surgeon, so I can't really fully comment on that. I guess should a specialist be concerned. All right, specialist opinion, but that plate looks appears to be a little bit too long, and if you do have chronic compressing of some foreign material on skin, it can erode away an infection. So I don't see any problems with the way this was handled medically after the removal, but does anybody have any concerns about that plate?
One first culture was a head scratcher for me. Like, yeah. We think we have an infection, but yet nothing grew, either aerobic or anaerobically. Mm-hmm. So you're like, do we really have an infection, or do we have something other, yes. Something else happening to the tissue, right? So that I feel like that should alert you. Mm-hmm. And then even with the second culture,